R.I.P. to the original trolley lady. They do replace her.
Yeah, she's Goblet of Fire. Yeah, different trolley lady has come back and she's tinkering in the background.
Question. question about Goblet of Fire. Did you cry at... I mean, you didn't, obviously, but did you cry
My boy! My son!
See, I can't possibly, because the actor they used to play that, I just...
Oh, Papa Diggory.
Yeah, Papa Diggory. He's from Drop the Dead Donkey, and so I cannot take that actor seriously in any way.
I see.
He's got
That's bad.
He's got UK sitcom vibes all over him. Of all the people they could have hired, come on, let's recast Papa Diggory.
Brad Pitt.
Please. No, come on. It's British.
Be serious.
It's small, like it's obviously...
Kevin Eldon.
Again,
Chris Morris.
No. Wait, slow down.
My boy, my son.
So you don't want to do the game?
I do want to do it. I was stalling for time with jokes while I was trying to think of a serious actor.
Well, let me, people who haven't seen Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
You know, we see, they might know Papa Diggory. You see him at the beginning when they all arrive at the Portkey for the big match. And then you see him at the end, importantly, in the crowds. And then he's got the big, my boy is dead.
Jeff Rawl is the actor.
Yeah, I mean, really, you want Daniel Day-Lewis.
You want...
because he's cradling, he's like, my boy. That's the scene.
I've abandoned my boy.
Exactly.
Okay, I guess you could have that.
We can't go DDL.
Well, DDL's the only significant, I was going to call him British, I suppose Irish, you know, of the area, the local geographical area actor that isn't in Harry Potter. I mean, one of the reasons it's difficult to recast Jeff Rawl in the role of Amos Diggory is because all the actors are already in the films.
No. I think there was... I know, do you know what? I said no there, and I should have said yes. You're right, but also
that's right.
You know, dig a little deeper and
diggity,
digger a little
diggity.
Bit deeper.
Listen, yes, I think you need please. To Amos diggity a little bit deeper there. Amos, okay,
but you know, we could find him, but let's not. Let's nip and tuck.
Okay,
now you're coming in with a really weird energy, but I don't mind it.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host, and Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot. You Forgot podcast. With me, your host, Adam Richmond. And joining me as ever... No, I'm not going to do joining me as ever yet. I'm going to introduce what the podcast is first. This is the podcast in which we chat about the movies or films that you forgot you'd even seen in the first place. And by you, I mean we. And who's the we? Well, the we is me and the leaky bucket boy with a big old bucket with nothing but holes.
Yeah.
Mr. Joe Devine.
Hello there.
How's it going?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. I'm excited to talk to you today about Wild.
Me too. On today's episode, we are doing the 2014 walking flick, Wild.
Wild.
Directed by Jean-Marc Vallée and starring Reese Witherspoon. Whose surname is the punchline of a very shit joke.
Yeah.
Well, let's get straight on to Forgot You Forgot. Before, I'll do the quick letterbox because the letterbox is so short. It's 115 mins. I don't mind. I could have taken 100 and I think 109 would have been preferable.
Sure.
A woman with a tragic past decides to start her new life by hiking for 1,000 miles on the Pacific Crest Trail. That is all we get. Do you like walking, Joe?
Well, if you ask my wife that, she'll tell you that I lied to her and said I did. before when I was first wooing her. And in my head, I really like walking. But actually, I think I just like watching walking films and I don't really like doing actual walking.
Do you like camping, Joe?
No, I don't like camping. It's very uncomfortable and it's hot in the tent. People never think about that. They think about the floor and the lack of sort of mattress bed support. But it gets all hot and condensation. I come from a family of sweaters. You know, I don't want to be in a tent. I'm not interested in a tent. No.
Do you like going on like long kind of backbreaking journeys of self-discovery?
I do like that.
Do you like destroying the self to rebuild yourself anew?
I actually do. And I think, you know, to expand a bit more on the walking thing, I don't love aimless. I hate aimless walking. Yeah. I don't want aimless wandery. What I want is an A to B. And so I've done significant walks before. I come from a family of walkers, hikers. They all loved hiking. My parents had a sort of group of friends that they would meet every year and do a significant hike. I have a very visceral memory of climbing one of the three peaks and these steps up being covered in little caterpillars.
Is that Maxine or was it Mervyn?
Are those the names of the peaks?
Those are two semi-famous people whose surname is Peak.
Oh.
Maxine Peak. She's a pretty up there. She's like a Samantha Morton type actress.
I don't know who that is.
Mervyn Peake wrote Gormenghast.
I don't know what that is. Oh, wait, is that sci-fi novel that English Ricky likes?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's sci-fi, it's more fantasy.
The Impenetrable Castle novel.
Yeah,
I tried to read that twice and I just thought, oh, I get to the bit where everything's dusty in the dusty room and I just go, oh, God, I don't care.
Forever dust. Will this guy ever leave a room?
But on walking, though, I did go to Spain.
No. We're done with walking. That was just a little bit of...
We're not done with walking. I was going somewhere and then you interrupted me to talk about Maxine Peak. I don't know who that is.
And then, because I was going
to where we talked about... I was trying to go with you on your Gormenghast thing, but I was going somewhere very important. Very important. No, the listener will want to hear about this.
Well, I guess you're editing it, so you can leave it in. Go for it.
That's true. I went on a long walk inspired by a walking film. Now, do you think that's relevant to this episode?
It's not relevant, but I kind of wanted to get straight because I know you used to love Into the Wild, and I was just using walking to kind of get us into... Wild is a walking movie with a female protagonist. Into the Wild is a walking movie with a male protagonist. I thought we could just do a little bit of chat about that rather than navel-gazing about walks.
Listen. I had a great, you know, but it's fine. Don't worry about it. I don't want to navel gaze here. You know? I want to talk only about, you know, whatever it is that you want to say. That's why I'm here. It's not like I don't have to share the story about my life.
What was the movie Into the Wild?
No, it wasn't.
Wasn't it?
No, it wasn't.
What walking movie? What could you possibly have gone on that wasn't
this? I don't think you really want to know.
Well, I'm asking because I do now.
Well, because you're asking, it was the film The Way with Martin Sheen.
Right, because I would have thought, you know, we talk about movies you forgot, or movies that no one ever saw, I would consider The Way to be a film no one's ever seen.
Yeah, no one's seen it and it's not that good. but it's based on a real life thing that is good.
Oh, based on something that Martin Sheen did and thought, hey, let's get some cameras out and let's see, should we redo me doing this? Or is it something else?
No, it's based on the Camino de Santiago. Ever heard of that?
Is it a walk?
Yeah. Ever heard of that, mate? It's not a walk. It's a fucking pilgrimage, okay? Different things. Is it mainly walking? Yes. Yes, it is. But what's the content of the walk? Well, it's pilgrimage. That's the content, and that's the distinction between a pilgrimage and a walk. And there are...
Tell me what a pilgrimage is.
A pilgrimage is a long walk, but with religious overtones.
I would say that The Wild is a pilgrimage.
In a way.
The film is a pilgrimage. It's just a... what's the word when it's not religious? Secular. It is a secular pilgrimage.
It is for sure. It is, absolutely. The Santiago the Camino de Santiago, that is a religious pilgrimage, largely. Although the bit of it I did secularly, because
you're not allowed to, mate. As soon as you step on that, you're basically signing up.
You're doing it religious, yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a tough thing to. But I did 3 days of it.
Is that all?
Yeah, that's all. I mean, it's supposed to take, it can take like months to do it all. The most of it goes from the northeast of Spain. Some of it starts in South France, and you walk all the way across the north of the country, and you end up in Santiago de Compostela, which is this lovely city in the northwest of Spain.
How many miles did you pack in?
I did 40 miles in 3 days. So above Reese Witherspoon levels, but below Martin Sheen levels.
What do you mean? You were above Reese Witherspoon?
Well, I mean that in the film The Wild, she's doing between 5 and 8 miles a day.
Yeah, but was your pack as big as hers?
My pack was pretty big. Yeah, it was pretty big.
Did you have a monster pack?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say what I loved about the film Wild, of which this episode is all about, incidentally, to those just tuning in. Mm. She starts off with a really big pack.
Yeah.
And also, emotionally, a heavy load. And as the physical journey progresses, her pack gets lighter, mm-hmm. as she removes things from the pack that she doesn't need anymore. And so too, emotionally, the emotional load, death of her mother at a very young age, her alcoholic abusive father, for example, the emotional load of that so too becomes lighter. And I really loved that symbolism throughout.
It's interesting that you say that, because I think that's a delightful observation, but I don't believe you.
I'm not joking.
Yeah, you really did like it.
I really enjoyed,
because you said it as you were joking.
I really enjoyed me noticing it most.
Okay. Yeah,
as opposed to it. And also I did enjoy I sound sarcastic. It is never drawn. It has never really drawn attention to. It is something that you can observe. And even if they must have meant it, it just feels lovely. The film is filled with things like that, with subtlety. It's a very lovely film. I was hoping for it to take me to Diving Bell and the Butterfly levels, which it didn't. But anyway, tell me about the El Camino.
The Camino, it's lovely. I did actually the Portuguese bit of it, which is not the traditional bit. I kind of went up from Portugal. But it's delightful. And the thing is, the nice thing about it is you see other people along the way who are also doing the walk. You put yourself through some physical discomfort. I mean, mine was relatively minor in comparison to the physical discomfort of what's-her-face Cheryl Strayed. You know, there's a lot, many, many more miles. There's a great sense of accomplishment. And when you finish, Santiago de Compostela, it's kind of on a hill. So as you're approaching it, you are walking pretty much up for the last day. And as you crawl into the city, there's all the people there who, they don't care that you're there, because there's people like you arriving every day. But you feel a great sense of accomplishment when you reach the center of the square and you look around, you look behind you in the big view and you think, oh yeah, I did a pretty good thing there. And inevitably, because you walk for hours a day and mostly alone, you have lots of time to think. So I enjoyed it. I would probably do more. And it's one of those experiences
where...
When
did you do this? You've never mentioned this to me before.
I did this in 2019. And I did this with my sister, a couple of my uncles and their partners. And we did it to commemorate the 10-year anniversary of my dead father.
Yeah, so like the whole grief side of it. I'm quite old now, and I still haven't really been touched by grief. And I think whilst I was, when I saw this at the cinema, when it came out, no big deal, 2014, I did find it quite affecting in the way that you see someone dealing with these things. And I was struck by it. I was very familiar with Cheryl Strayed. And then subsequent to that, she's got a great podcast called Dear Sugar. She's a really funny, smart woman. And She's just really honest about stuff. But then now, because I've already seen it, and it's, how long is it now? It's
10
almost
years.
10 almost 10 years later. Because I kind of know it, and I still haven't been struck by grief. It doesn't take me, it's not about daddy. Importantly, this is not about daddy.
No, daddy's very absent.
It's about mummy.
Yeah.
And so therefore, it doesn't take me to Diving Bell. But for you, how was it? Did you remember watching it? And did it strike you in the past? And then how did it strike you now?
Not really. I mean, I do remember watching it. I remember thinking it was fine, you know, sort of broadly enjoying it. Perhaps in my memory, it was a 6 out of 10, you know?
Yeah.
This time I enjoyed it a lot more. I think I, you know, maybe didn't give it enough credit the first time around. I think the way that the film is made is, I appreciate that more now. I think it's a lot more subtle than I remember it being. I think there's a division for me between the filmmaking and the style of film and then the tone. The tone isn't always for me, and I think some of the monologues, some of the lines that have probably come from the book are not, you know, if there was a spectrum and with at one end there was a cynicism and the other end was twee, and I was on that and the film was on that, then I the film is closer to twee than I am. Not to say the film is twee, but the film is closer to twee than me.
I was really trying to imagine that scale you were drawing as you were speaking, and I was like, what in Christ? It was kind of I see what you were trying to do. You were trying to call it a film twee without calling it twee.
Well, it's twee for me, basically. That's all. But that doesn't make it twee, because for others it probably isn't twee. You know, twee's a movable, subjective, movable feast, isn't it?
For example, do you find the line, you need to put yourself in the way of beauty? Do you find that twee, or do you find that striking and evocative?
I don't find it twee or striking or evocative. I find that to be an interesting thought. And I kind of, you know, I appreciate that as a sort of central, you know, central theme, central narrative of the film. There are other lines within the film that I
I'm not trying to catch you out here.
That was just something that
I wrote down.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to get you on this gauge. Right. What about the nature of the ending, where the kind of realization, her sort of thinking, her reflecting on her life, and her saying, basically, what if my mum needed to die? What if I needed to be a junkie? What if I needed to fuck all these men? What if I needed to lose my husband? What if I needed to do all of those things to be where I am now?
Mm-hmm.
How do you rate that as a thought, as a view on life? Do you see that as, let's not say twee, because I think we've...
Yeah. That's not twee.
I think that's quite a nice... It feels like given the contrast of heroin, casual sex, death,
mm-hmm.
with a forward-looking, I'm going to live life and I'm going to accept who I am kind of stance, it feels quite strong. And in terms of self-helpy kind of lingo, it's good, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have two thoughts about it that are a little conflicting. One is,
I do
agree that it's quite strong. I've thought this many times myself. I would say it's a fairly common thought, and I think it's a nice means of being able to deal with and contextualize and put into perspective difficult experiences. And I think also, obviously, in order to experience happiness, you have to experience sadness. There's a kind of yin and a yang to these sorts of things.
I think you're too harsh to say it. I think it might obviously be about, but I don't think it's obvious. I haven't thought that in those terms
really
for a long time.
All the things that happened to you, they made you who you are now. And if something had gone different, then you wouldn't be you.
Yeah, but that's the tea towel version of it. The way the film presents it it feels a bit more nuanced than that and more striking as a result.
Well, this isn't going well then, because that was my positive one.
Oh, that was your positive one. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah. Okay.
My negative one, it's not that negative. It's just that, you know, it's difficult to have this conversation without talking philosophically about our own philosophical beliefs. And I don't believe either in the kind of linear nature of time, or purpose or meaning, or I also, you know, I'm not certain that I don't believe in, you know, predestined, you know, reality. So I'm not sure that it's relevant whether or not what's her name? I keep wanting to call her Sharon.
Cheryl Strayed.
I'm not sure. For me, for her, I'm perfectly happy to accept it. It's clearly very relevant because she wrote a book about it. It was obviously obviously had a huge impact on her life, understandably. To me, I don't, you know, I don't look at my life in that way because I don't, but I'm not even sure this is happening. So I think in order to feel the way that she feels, you have to place a certain amount of belief and meaning in the elements that make up your life. And I don't do that.
I think maybe, I think that's a bit harsh. I think there's so much, I think it just applies to, we're all stuck in our head and we all experience pain and suffering and sadness and happiness. And it's purely, it's just a lens.
It's the lens. She's talking about the lens.
And it's a really nice way to go, well, I decided to see life like this. I decided to say, yeah, I wanted to fuck those guys in the alley. And I, you know, and claim those things as hers.
Yeah.
It's
because it helps one feel as though one's in control.
Exactly.
Like, yeah, which I don't believe in.
What do you mean? Well, yeah, but some people need it to be in control. Like she was a junkie and she was cheating on her husband and her life was going off the rails and she wasn't who she wanted to be. She goes on this walk and she kind of clicks into, finds that lens that makes sense of the world so then that she can get by.
And like those experiences are transformative. It is good. And when I did my very, very small version of a similar sort of walk, I had a transformative experience as well. I came home and felt very different. And then I didn't, you know. I think like fundamentally...
Because you only did 3 days, mate.
I fundamentally believe in, you know, randomness, chaos, and that I don't really have any, you know, really any control. I don't mean that in a I abandon all hope way, or I don't take an active role in my life, because I do. But I suppose because I feel that way about life and the world and whether, you know, our existence, sometimes I find it a little difficult to connect with stories like this. And it's on my notes to say that, you know, long walks, which is basically what this is, they are transformative. They're fantastic for your personal experience. And when you do one, or you do something like that, or you commit yourself to a challenge which is very difficult and you overcome it, understandably that transforms your life. When films about long walks, it's very difficult to capture that. And to give the credit to Wilde, it does as good a job as the best ones at capturing that. And it still doesn't come anywhere close to, obviously, that feeling of experience.
Yeah, but I think that's all every film about anything, a film about that has a concert in it, a film that's about music, a film that's about writing.
Well, first, like, I've been in a...
You're
in
not
a,
wrong, obviously, but you're just annoying me now. Yeah, so.
I've been in a tower when it was attacked by German terrorists, and I when I watched Die Hard afterwards, bingo. Brilliant film. Secondly, I think there are lots of films that do music really well. Like music in a way that, you know...
Don't pick up on that point. We haven't got time. I don't know if this is true, Joe, but as I was watching the film Wild, starring Reese Witherspoon, made in 2014, I was watching it thinking, hang on a sec, this is just a female version of The Revenant.
Right.
And I don't know if that's true or not, but I thought it, and I thought, yeah.
Explain more.
In The Revenant...
Women can't deal with bears. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's a very interesting. You went straight there. I find it interesting that Leonardo DiCaprio has to prove his manhood and his self by getting torn to pieces in a bear. And I am talking about Leo, because he did accept the film and insist on that. As opposed to Reese Witherspoon... She can show her grit. She's so ego-free. She doesn't need that. She will just go on the walk.
Well, she'll tear her own toenail off in the opening scene.
That's it.
Yeah.
She does not need to be torn to pieces by a bear to show that she is some kind of big hotshot. I mean, if you compare the male versions of these stories to the female versions of these stories, I find that there's, I don't know, I think there's something in there. There's something quite interesting in there, maybe. I mean, which is specifically with The Revenant, you do have flashbacks. He has lost someone. He's trying to rediscover who he is and what life means. And he just does it by grunting and trying to track down Tom Hardy. You know, Reese Witherspoon, it's a less showy, less flashy, more true and valuable film as a result of you know, just showing the walk. It doesn't have to be in genre. You know, most other male versions of this, aside from The Walk featuring Martin Sheen, you know, they're genre films. They're survival in the wilderness movies, horror, a lot of horror knocking about.
Well, you're touching on a point that I wanted to make, actually, which is that I think when it comes to nature movies, that there's two sort of main categories. One is survival films, which you've said already. So The Revenant, The Grey, which we mentioned a bit on The Revenant episode.
Just a bloody bit, mate.
Just a bloody bit. Everest. You could even claim like Jaws in a way. It's not wilderness, but it's sea, you know. Castaway. These are survival films, which, and what they do is they kind of pit, usually man, like you've said, man against nature. And nature becomes like the ambivalent antagonist of those films, right? Like it doesn't care about them, but it's there to be conquered by the character.
Well, I mean, not necessarily conquered. I mean, sort of suffered and endured and you survive.
Well, that's what I mean by conquered, you know, like to throw off the control that nature might claim to have upon you and say, I survive anyway in spite of you. That's a kind of conquering of but yeah, for sure, survival conquer.
I mean, there's a less grandiose, I just picked up, there's no grandiosity, I would say, in these survival films. It's not like Rambo at the end or Rocky at the end, although Rambo does have survival vibes. There's a kind of a bleaker sadness of like an acceptance of nature's power and like doffing one's cap and going, sorry nature, sorry, won't do that again. You know, chill,
sure,
chill, yeah, chill, I'll be really nice to you now.
Yeah, well, look, absolutely. And then in the other category of nature films is called nature films. That's what I've done, is nature films, subcategory B, nature films, where nature is used as a canvas for the character to have a transformative experience. So we obviously Wild, The Way, we've mentioned, Into the Wild, also a couple of others in here that are slightly different. The Hunter with Willem Dafoe. Have you seen that?
Yeah, you tried to get me on it. I think we might well do that.
I love that film. It's so terrific.
Oh, no, yeah. I can't get you on it because you love it.
Oh, you could get me on it. I can't really remember anything that happens about it except that I love it. Yeah. There's Captain Fantastic, which again is like really just in this partly in this list because it's some of it sets within the wilderness, but and it is
starts
very,
off. It's not. Yeah. It starts off that.
But that's
way,
what I'm saying. Not, if you did allow me to finish, you would hear me. It's kind of the inverse, right? It's like that. The setting of nature in this instance is society. It's a you know, a family that come from the wilderness and go into society and have that transformative experience in some way. Another one, and you're really going to argue with this. This is, I'm throwing this one in there to see what you will say, is The Lives of Others. Because it's kind of a nature film in the sense that because our German friend is sat behind the walls all the time and no one knows he's there.
He's David Attenborough.
He's David Attenborough. And he is observing nature. It just so happens that it's nature in East Berlin.
Can we do The Lives of Others?
I'd love to do The Lives of Others. I have never forgotten it. I don't know if you have.
I have forgotten it.
Have you? Well, we could do that then. Yeah, I'll add it to my list and I'll get you with it at some point. That would be really fun.
Got the screenplay of it. It's a fantastic screenplay.
Yeah.
But what about, would you say like the horror genre of the survival film is just a subcategory?
Probably.
Survival. Because I did want to, because there's quite an interesting, because, you know, Wild is straight down the line. It's just a walking movie.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get over something. But there's quite a few.
That's the same as The Way.
But there's quite a few female genre versions of the same thing where you've got the female protagonist who's trying to get over something in the horror version. So you've got Prey, which is a predator flick, Crawl, which is a survival in a flooding house with a crocodile flick. The Shallows, which is Blake Lively on a rock trying to survive a shark. Gravity, I would argue, is one of those.
An extreme nature film.
You've all got female protagonists in the face of something nature-wise, and they've all got a kind of a grief to them that they need to bloody pull their socks up about and get over.
So the distinction really is whether they're surviving and nature is kind of bad, or they're surviving and nature is kind of good, right?
No, in the ones I just listed, nature's always either bad or indifferent. What's nice about Wild is it is just, nature is glorious. It's something. It's
an unlocker.
Something to soak in.
Yeah.
Conditions are harsh. I never felt nature was personified in Wild. It's all about her frustrations or inability to do stuff and learning on the job.
Apart from the fox, which is presumably a representation of her mother, which is very much personified.
Yeah, I could have done without the fox.
Really bad CG there.
Unnecessary.
We'll come back to the fox when we play the budget game.
How do you kind of connect to that, the film's view of humanity? You've already sort of touched upon how possibly twee you found it. What do you think about its viewpoint of the world is and people in it? Also, maybe compare it to your favorite film, Into the Wild, which has a similar kind of protagonist interacting with people around them. I feel like there's huge parallels between them.
I think they're very different, actually. I would compare Wild closer with The Way, which is the Martin Sheen film. I'm not going to do
that. Tell me why they're different. Also, parallels. Parallels are different, aren't they? They run side by side.
I would say in the film, in Wild, with Reese Witherspoon, released in 2014, directed by the Cheryl Strayed, the central character, is doing something to rediscover life. She's trying to, as her mother says, put herself in the way of beauty. She's looking for ways to reconnect with society, not disconnect from it. She might want to leave a part of her life in the city behind, but she's only doing this for a temporary period of time. She's going on a walk for 3 to 6 months. She will be finished, right? And so in that sense, her view of society and the film's view of society is framed by that reference point. There is something which is different about it, though, which I think is pretty key. There are several scenes where the threat of sexual violence is there. And I think that's obviously very important because she is a female walker traveling alone. And at any point in the film, you are reminded that that is a possibility. I quite liked that about the film. It's very easy for me as a man to forget that. You never really see that when you watch a film like Into the Wild. So the idea that that's kind of ever present, it does partly represent perhaps a view of society or a view, the character's specific subjective view, but also it's just a reality and you're never far away from that.
Yeah, we'll have to do a tiny little cul-de-sac and then we're going to come back to your other point because, that speaks to the female experience that kind of cuts right through this film in a really subtle way that is its strongest point. And it kind of predates stuff like mansplaining being a thing. But it's in there, it's baked into the film. And this it's just really subtly done. There's this amazing bit towards the end where she meets these three cocky, sweet, nice guys. But she's also met this real prick who's kind of cracking onto her. Who's in charge of the post wherever they're staying, and as soon as the prick meets her, he's kind of smarming onto her. And Cheryl, played by Reese Witherspoon, is very kind of, she's as she has always been. She's just kind of polite but firm, maintaining her boundaries. But she never calls anyone out on it. And then she gets to hang out with these kind of three, like, young, sweet little lads come and join her and seemingly save her by giving her some company away from this smarmy guy. And then the morning after, she's had some nice drinks, but they're nice, but these lads are a bit, they're still a bit they're just guys, and you realise they're not that nice.
They're not on the level.
And then in the morning after, the smarmy prick comes by and gives her a coffee and a donut, but obviously he doesn't give the three lads anything, and he kind of goes off. And the three sweet little lads who've been quite nice, they sort of say, "Oh, you must have had it so easy, you know, free coffee and donuts."
People just want to help you, they say. No one wants to help us.
It's an amazing scene, and it just holds on Reese Witherspoon's face and her. What a hell of an actress. It's all there. She doesn't call him out. There's not this big scene where she kind of explains everything that she's been through and the other times when she's felt the threat of sexual violence. It just, and it almost passes, and it's just so, it's just, it's perfect, man.
Yeah, it really is.
And it's fantastic.
I agree. I love that scene. And also I think that's the third of three scenes that happen throughout the film that kind of that take you on a secondary journey alongside the walk. Obviously, the whole film is filled with flashbacks to Reese Witherspoon's previous life, during many of which she's having indiscriminate sex with men and reflecting on that. But on the walk specifically, first she meets a farmer when she's desperate for water, and initially she's afraid enough to pretend that her husband is also on the walk with her, just at a different stage of the walk, because she's afraid of the farmer. And he turns out to be, you know, a nice enough married man who picked up on her fear and then alleviated it by telling her immediately that he was married. The second instance is after the halfway point, when she's again running out of water. So these are in moments when she needs something to survive. This time, instead of having to go and ask someone for help, she's got these filters. She finds like a still standing pool, and she starts to pump out the water with the filter and use the iodine drops and whatever. And she's approached by two hunters who are very much, not good guys. One of whom is spying on her, comes back later, spies on her again. It's a frightening scene, and it's the most present threat of sexual violence. Then the third scene is the one that you're talking about as well. So I quite like the subtlety of it throughout, also with those flashbacks. But I think when you look at those three scenes together and where they occur along her journey, they also, like, they tell a separate story, but they really feed into the story of her evolution as well, and how she deals differently with them each step of the way.
It's very good, very subtle storytelling.
It's very subtle.
But my memory of Into the Wild was, I love how you set it up about, and I kind of almost knew what you were going to say. She's going on a journey to kind of rediscover herself, to return.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas, was it Chris?
Chris McCandless.
Chris McCandless. He's going into the wild almost to disappear and... I mean, he's not going out there to kill himself, but he does ultimately die. But along the way, that film has, he kind of meets all these lovely people. And I feel that that's where I felt that I was kind of guiding you, and I wanted you to land on, that's what I thought you'd had that same sort of like, oh yeah, he meets lots of lovely people, has surprising warm interactions.
He does.
And Cheryl Strayed in the same way. She's such a generous spirit. She has the same, as despite these quite scary moments that she experiences broadly, she meets lovely people and has lovely, she's open-hearted, and she has discussed conversations that she would never have had, and sees people she never would have seen, in the same way that I think the guy from Into the Wild does. And so, but I feel that they're both very generous, broadly, in terms of how they see humanity and how, what people are like, what strangers are like. A stranger's just a person that you've not met. That's another Shed 7 lyric. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, and I think there are definitely similarities between the characters. I also think it's a staple of the walking movie that you meet people along the way and have these different personal experiences. The difference for me is, as I said, Reese Witherspoon, Cheryl Strayed is going intentionally to find a transformative experience to return to society. And also, it's never clear, it's never expressed at all that her view of people is in any way huge or particularly negative, other than the specific people. Okay. Whereas Chris McCandless, he does have these meaningful exchanges along the way. However, at any point when you are, when the character is asked what he wants to go somewhere where there are no people. He wants to go somewhere where there is no society, where he can just be out there in the wild on his own, with big game and all the rest of it. And actually, the interesting thing about the differences between those experiences of these characters meeting people along the way, when Cheryl Strayed meets someone, she's open. She learns something from those people. She has a mutually beneficial exchange with them. When Christopher McCandless meets someone, there's a kind of youthful arrogance to the character that the film shows him teaching these older people something about life that they didn't already know. He meets an old man near the beginning, and he insists upon him as they, you know, part ways towards the end, that old man needn't worry about being lonely, because you can find a true life experience in nature, in anything. It doesn't have to come from personal connection with other people. He meets a struggling couple, the mother of who has lost her son, and Christopher McCandless reminds her of her son, and he helps to he thinks he helps to breathe new life back into their relationship. He meets Vince Vaughn, not the real Vince Vaughn, but he meets a character played by Vince Vaughn, and they get drunk and like have the perfect kind of like high hammered conversations about being out there in the wild. Point is, the film ends with him writing down in between the paragraphs of one, I can't remember the writer, but in between the paragraphs of one of his favourite writers who's sold Walden, on this idea. Surely. Maybe, yeah. Who's sold on this idea of, how man can find some meaning in nature. The thing he writes down is that, like, these experiences are best shared. That's the thing he learns when he's alone dying in the wilderness, right? Like, his journey is a essentially an epic failure come the end, right? Like a very dramatic failure. The thing he realizes is everything that he's left behind. And all these older people who he arrogantly thought that he was changing along the way were trying to tell him that meaningful human connection is the thing that you're looking for. And that's the difference for me between the two characters. So I think the films are quite different for that reason. But,
they're just different, I'd say... they're different sides of the same coin,
I think they're the same side of different coins.
I think they're the same different side of different same coins.
I agree with that.
It's interesting. I didn't pick up on any of that when I watched Into the Wild, and I can't remember a thing about it. It's the most forgettable film I've ever seen.
You should watch
it. And I love the fact that... Rewatch it, mate.
You should rewatch it.
Well, make me. I love the fact for a long time that you said it was your favourite film, and then recently you've really climbed down on that.
It's not recent. Said, I told you it was my favourite film when I was a fucking teenager, and it's been a film as an adult that I'm aware that it's no longer my favourite film. It meant something to me when I was younger, because I too, like you, watched it and didn't pick up on what the fucking film was about, and then I watched it again as an adult, which you should do, and you'll realise that all of, the film is essentially like a romanticization of all of these things up to the point where it goes, or it pulls the rug out from underneath you and goes, whoops, that was wrong.
Is that you reading Being Too Kind? I don't imagine.
No.
Is it directed by Sean Penn?
I don't know.
Hang on a sec.
Let me tell you.
I just don't give any... I don't give the person who made that film that much credit.
Yes, Sean Penn.
Yeah, I don't think Sean Penn's that clever.
It's literally... Anyway. I promise you, it's in the text. It's literally in the text. You cannot avoid it.
Okay.
You were wrong when you watched it. That's the problem. And so was I. And that's why I liked
it. Hey, I tell you what, my favourite bit of this film was when she quotes the poem by...
What, any number of different people?
She quotes Robert Frost.
Does she?
I've got many miles to go.
No,
and many
does she?
Miles to keep. You can play in
the cameo. We can put the cameo in here.
Yes.
That is wonderful. I completely missed that.
Hello there, Joe and Alan.
And Alan. Hi, Joe and Alan.
Thanks, Joe and Alan, for requesting that I read Robert Frost's The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that passing there, had worn them really about the same. and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Home. I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that's made all the difference.
Speaking of Into the Wild and the Wild,
yeah,
and Wild from 2014,
and The Way.
I'm not talking about The Way.
No?
I'm not mentioning The Way ever again.
Can I talk about The Way at any point in this episode?
I'd rather you didn't. You
why,
have
why
you did
not?
Use it, but you used it. We've already done that. You've used
I know,
it
but
to
it's
talk
just
about
because
your
you
personal
haven't
experience.
Seen it. You want to shut down any conversation about it. But I wasn't going to say anything that would be confusing to you. I just thought people didn't see it and might be interested to watch it if they watched Wild along with us and enjoyed it and was looking for something similar.
Great, you've said it. Okay,
no.
So Into the Wild,
no.
Into the Wild, your favourite film, is very much soundtracked by the voice, the husky tones of Eddie Vedder,
mm-hmm.
of Pearl Jam fame.
Yeah.
What's that, Society? You were singing
your
earlier.
Your crazy
singing.
Breed. I hope you're not lonely without me. Do you know, when I was in Banff, you know, National Park, Canada, Western Canada, British Columbia, Banff.
Yeah.
I was there and I was in a nightclub. That's a sort of unlikely thing, isn't it? But I was in the one nightclub in Banff and I went outside to smoke a cigarette and there was a busker there and he was playing all, you know, popular tunes. And then I said to him, listen, mate, I've come all the way from the UK. Play me something that, you know, isn't not one of the hits, yeah? And he played Eddie Vedder's Society. And I was very excited by that. And I gave him $20 and he was very happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's fantastic.
It's a pretty good story. Pretty good.
Yeah, I don't mind it.
Well,
the film Wild,
mm-hmm.
from 2014,
yeah.
directed by Jean-Marc Vallée,
yeah.
starring Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah.
It's not soundtracked by anyone per se,
no.
but it. What I would say kind of culminates in, not culminates is the wrong word because that suggests at the end, towards the end of the second act, she ends up going to a Grateful Dead kind of covers band and has sexy sex with a guy who's in Game of Thrones.
But who was he in Game of Thrones?
He's the guy who got recast as Ed Skrein. You know, the guy, he ends up with Daenerys Stormborn.
Oh, the guy who is the dude who has all the mercenary people. That guy.
Yeah, there's three mercenaries,
yeah.
and then he kills. But it's played by a different. The initial actor is someone else, and then
a really creepy guy with long hair, and then they replace him with a normal looking guy, and that's this guy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ed, someone,
Huisman.
He's like a bog standard sexy looking guy.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, so she goes to the, and they're singing, I think, Grateful Dead songs. I don't know what Grateful Dead songs are. I think they're Grateful Dead songs. But then I think there's kind of Jerry Garcia vibes.
Yeah.
And the music starts to be, it's kind of, it all feels of a piece of Wild. It's this kind of folky, psychedelic type shit, as opposed to Eddie Vedder's folky, his is folky, but more strident and
earth
big.
Earth tone, big.
It's
more world.
Sing along, you know, it's sing along stuff. You know,
hell,
you're Mr.
No Fear.
You're Mr.
For
Music.
Oh, when I'm alone. Yeah?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. You're Mr. Music.
I will comfort you.
I mean, I can
I'm Mr.
Sing.
Music. What would you like from me?
Well, I don't know. I just thought, I want any chance to stick the boot into the Wild. Eddie Vedder just seems really, effectively, like, may as well do it with Coldplay.
Hey, man, that is completely unacceptable.
How do you think each of those musical tones, they fit, right? They fit both of those films?
Editor's note here. I just wanted to respond to the last 5 minutes or so of Adam in the form of song rather than in the actual podcast, and to surprise Adam.
Oh, it's a mystery to me. Why can't I talk about the film The Walk? Just because Adam hasn't seen the film, does he think I'm gonna swallow up this pill? Well, I won't do that. The film The Walk, it's a good film. Adam hasn't seen it, but it's okay. An old Eddie is not Coldplay, even though that's not a dismissive comment about Coldplay, who are broadly fine and have written a number of pretty good songs. Fuck you, Adam.
Should we play the box office game?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you want one more? Do you want to say one more thing about The Way?
I'd love to say one more thing about The Way.
Say one more thing about a film I've never seen, and every time you mention it, it makes my blood boil.
Guess what? It's daddy stuff. It's the one that you should have watched because it's got daddy stuff.
It's directed by Emilio Estevez, his son.
It is directed by Emilio Estevez, and it stars Martin Sheen, his papa. And it's a very, I mean, it's closer to Twee than me, right? I'm not saying I think Wild is a better film, objectively, and subjectively it's a better film for me too. But it's The Way is a great, another example of how these walking films often relate to grief. Martin Sheen plays the character Tom, who receives a tragic phone call at the opening of the film. The phone call is to let him know that his son. Yeah, and you play Martin Sheen, okay?
No,
you play Martin
you're
Sheen.
Martin Sheen, mate.
No, you're Martin Sheen, because you don't know what happens. You're Martin Sheen.
Oh, wait, so why am I ringing?
Yeah, you have to answer your own phone. Go.
Hello.
Hello, Mr. Sheen. I am Russian man, but I am from Spain. And I'm calling from the Spanish police department.
I've just been out watching the West Wing box set. Why, you interrupted me at quite an important time. I don't have any time for this young man. I'm going to put the
Sheen,
phone down.
No, this please. This relates to Emilio Estevez. Emilio Estevez, your son. He came.
Last
Spain.
Time I checked, no, he was no. doing well.
Mr.
Young
Sheen.
Guns, Young Guns 2.
Mr. Sheen. Yeah. He's not your. It's not Charlie Sheen. It's Emilio Estevez, yeah? And
Yes, Young Guns. Young Guns 2.
Oh, sorry. I thought you said that other one, the Palmy,
Major
Palmy
League
one.
Major League 2. No, I don't speak about that.
Children and Men. What is it called? Two and a Half Boys. Two and a Half Men. Now listen, Martin Sheen, I have to tell you, Emilio Estevez, your son, he came here to do walk, Camino, famous walk, pilgrimage. Do you know difference between, never mind. Listen.
He mentioned something like that. He said he was going to be going for a long, long walk. And I said, yeah, don't forget to pick me up some milk there, Emilio.
Well, that's funny.
How
Mr.
long
Sheen,
could it take?
Walk is 1,000 miles, yeah? Emilio.
Like the Vanessa Carlton song.
Yes. But Emilio
made the piano bit, you know what I mean?
Martin Sheen.
I would walk.
Emilio made it 20 and dead.
I thought you just said he made it 20 and ed. At what? At a sandwich? 20, yeah, 20, and then what did he eat? I don't know why you're calling me to tell me what he ate after 20 miles.
Hold on, let me put my Spanish supervisor on the phone, okay?
Yes.
Mr. Sheen, your son is dead, sir. He died on the Camino.
Dead, he's dead handsome. I know he's dead handsome,
no,
yes.
No, Mr. Sheen, his body ceases to live.
It ceases to live?
That's right.
His soul has left.
His body, he's dead, yes.
He's dead, he's dead.
Yes. Hold on, let me put my English, the mayor on the phone. I'm very sorry, Mr. Sheen, your
son is dead. He died.
Well, I tell you what, it sounds like I need to do some walking of my own.
Well,
if I beat that 20-mile mark, I'll learn quite a few things about me, myself, and my relationship to my son, Emilio Estevez. Taxi, take me to El Camino.
There you go. And that's basically the film. But what happens is Martin Sheen, he arrives in Spain, northeast Spain, at the beginning of the walk. He collects his son's ashes from the Spanish authorities, and then he carries his son's ashes for the entire walk and sprinkles him at the end. I mean, it's like, it's pretty twee, but it's a lovely through line. It's a very meaningful
notoriously thing heavy ashes.
Very heavy. Ooh, ashes.
These ashes are so heavy.
Well, the
burden. Can't even have the burden. Oh, he can't even have the, you know, the bag burden of wild. Sure. Pathetic.
Pathetic. But he meets Sarah and Just on the way, and they, you know, James Nesbitt's in this film as well. And it's not a terrific film, but it, as a kind of, as a, Papa, you know, as a nice cinematic journey, it is good. And it is about transforming. And it's about, you know, it's about how to find life and happiness in deep grief and transformation. So I would recommend it as a watch.
That's what the film Wild is about. But you like the film about an old man.
Yeah.
You don't like the one with a young woman in.
When I wrote that earlier song, I forgot that we had actually talked about the way. And then I put a lot of time into it in the edit. And then immediately afterwards, I found the bit where we talked about it. And it was, it's a sunk cost, so I'm going to leave them in there, even though it doesn't make sense.
Shall we do the box office game?
Let's do the box office game for the film The Way with Martin Sheen. No,
I
not really.
Do that.
We're doing it for Wild. I would say this is a toughy-wuffy, potentially. I'm going to say that the budget here has brackets estimated after it on IMDb, but we've never let that stop us before.
It's going to be very estimated. It's one of those small little pictures.
Yeah. Well, the question is, was Reese with a golden spoon or a less valuable metal spoon?
So I think it's going to be small. There's not much on screen. They've gone on location.
Does it make it to 8 digits or is it 7?
Yeah, you see, I never know what that means. I always just count the zeros.
Well, okay, well, in your world, well, no, because there'd be the same number of zeros, though it's confusing, because unless it was 10 million, then there would be more. Then there'd be 7 zeros.
Mm.
8 digits is 10 million to 99 million, yeah?
So, yeah, and then 9 digits.
9 digits is 100 million to 999 million. 7 digits would be 1 million to 9 million. 999,999 technically, but you know what I'm saying.
So it's in the 8. I mean, 8, that doesn't really, that's not narrowing it down.
You think it's 8?
Let's say they get it in for 8 million.
Well, unfortunately, it was 8 digits, but it wasn't 8 million. It was $15 million.
Okay, I'm happy with that.
Not so bad. Not so bad.
I think they could have done it for 8.
They probably could have done it for 8, but that's why I was thinking that the additional 7 that you missed out on there, I reckon that was all spent on the shit fox, the CG fox. What a waste of money that was, eh? Why do you think they didn't get a real fox?
Oh, you can't get a real fox to do that.
Why not? I mean, I've seen loads of domesticated foxes.
He was also a baby fox, but also the amount of...
A kit.
Like, it's shooting hours, okay? Like, to train a fox to get it to do what you want.
Well, you get a pre-trained fox.
No, no, no. Imagine it doesn't do what you want to do on the day. Okay,
that's okay, a day's here's a question for
shooting.
You.
Wait a sec, that's a day's shooting you just can't afford on that low-budget film.
Yeah.
If you do it all in post, the fox does everything you want.
Yeah, but it doesn't you tell look it what to do. Good. It looks like doesn't. It's a fake computer fox. Here's a question for you. Why does the fox need to do what they want it to do? Why can't they just get a fox that is trained enough to sort of be around a bit? What if it did stuff that, you know, all it does is look a bit. It looks at her a bit. You could do that with some food and a fox.
It needs to look as cute as it does.
Real fox would look cuter than a computer fox.
No, it's got like a certain cartoony dreamlike quality, this fox. But also, yeah, you need it to hold the look for long enough. Also, if it's a real fox, you've got bloody animal rights people going, what did you do to the fox to do that? And they'll moan about it. You know, no one wants that.
What did they do to the fox?
Exactly.
Mm. Okay. Well, anyway, that's why it cost $15 million, was because of the fox. But what do you think it made on its opening weekend, US and Canada? And let me tell you, it was released December the 7th, 2014.
Can Reese open a walking picture? Now, this is an actress that you and I both know full well that people will only accept as the lead of Legally Blonde, the comedy. And that no one is going to accept her in any other role.
No one's like, expecting this.
No one's expecting, no one's accepting.
But America does love Reese Witherspoon.
They just want to see her. They want her to see her blonde and they want to see her legally.
Yeah.
And she's both of those things in this film.
Yeah.
She's got some hiking boots on. Does it look as funny as Legally Blonde?
Yeah. No. No.
I think they're thinking not, but are they intrigued enough? I'm still going to think it can't make that much. It's going to make 800 grand.
That's pretty close, man. $606,000 it made.
Oh.
I think that's close. I know that's outside of the 20% range, but I will say for sub 1 mil, that's a pretty good guess, yeah.
I mean, yeah, you've got to kind of be give me some wiggle room on when you're in the hundreds of grands.
Yeah.
The 10% thing's got to go out of the window, hasn't
it? Well, not completely out the window. It's halfway out the window. Half of it's in the window and the other half is out of the window.
I think everyone knows what an amazing guess that was, except you.
Well, we'll have to imagine what the listeners are thinking as we guess the gross worldwide for Wild.
Oh. I mean, I think it's going to wash its face. This is a BAFTA nominee, don't you know? If I watched this on Amazon Prime and in big letters it says BAFTA nominee. Now, what do you think, Joe? Do you think being a BAFTA nominee is good enough to brag about?
No.
Do you even think it's big enough to, if you're a BAFTA winner? BAFTA, for anyone, for our audience, for our foreign listeners, is the British Academy after.
Well, this is the thing. No, I don't think anyone outside of the UK should know what that is. So, no, I don't think so. And
if you're a UK viewer like us? Maybe they're not advertising it as a BAFTA nominee.
They wouldn't be. We should know what it is, but we shouldn't respect it, like any British institution. We should be aware of it, but consciously disrespect it. Unless it's the BBC, of course, in which case, you know, everyone just needs to get in line.
You don't see it as the fact that it was nommed as any kind of marker of like, oh, hang on a sec, I've missed that film. It came out in 2014. BAFTA nominee, you say?
No.
Nominee.
Do you know what that means? What it means instead, like it does for any awards ceremony outside of the Academy Awards, the Golden Globes, or anything that specifically owns an area, not a country, right? When you're nominated for a BAFTA, it's that the British think that they might be able to get you to come to their awards ceremony if they nominate your film. And the British, understandably, would love Reese Witherspoon to attend the BAFTAs, wouldn't they? Because the British would think that that would be great. Not to say that the film didn't deserve a BAFTA. It just doesn't mean anything because it's just a BAFTA.
Oof, what a burn. He's nailed it again, people.
That's right.
So, but what did it make?
What did it make?
Cost 15.
Mm.
25?
Oh, it's some distance off. You do not believe in the power of Reese. 52.5, baby.
Oh, that's really, that's strong. That shows, you know, she's got the power.
She's got the pulling power.
She pulls them in. Yeah. That's really impressive.
Very impressive. I mean, that has to be considered a romping success for a small film.
Mm. Well done to everyone involved.
Hey, that's my catchphrase.
Should we do the bit of the podcast where one of us reads out a list of films to catch out the other person on a movie they forgot?
I think it's your turn this week to get me.
Yeah, here we go. I'm going to get you, mate. Going to get you. Meet the Parents. Hey, it's a soft lob.
What's fun about this, though, is that I have I've watched Meet the Fockers like 10, 15 times.
What?
Meet the Parents. I can't really remember that much about it, but I kind of intimately know the characters, I suppose. Is it, I'm not sure how to respond to that one. Let's put that on the back burner.
Skip over. Yeah, yeah, I've never seen Meet the Fockers.
You've never seen Meet the Fockers?
No.
Lovely little jaunt, Meet the Fockers.
I just won't see it because of the name. The it's based on the shittest joke of the first film, the fact that he's called Greg Focker.
Yeah, but it's got Dustin Hoffman in it, and it's got,
I know who's in it.
Oh,
I know who's in it, mate. Right. I know Barbara Streisand's in it.
Barbara Streisand and Dustin Hoffman, they make a delightful couple. They're very funny.
Yeah, okay. I don't like either of them as actors. And the
you don't
premise,
like Dustin Hoffman or Barbara Streisand as actors?
No, not really.
You said some weird shit on this podcast series, man, but I think that's up there.
Okay, well, I'm gonna stand by it.
Yeah. You do you.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
Which one's that?
Mate, that sounds, do you know what that sounds like?
No.
That sounds like, I've just got you.
Is it, because there's so many of those films that it's like, it's kind of cheating. That's, almost, because
no,
it's like,
not
which one
almost.
Is it? Which one is it?
It's the one with James Franco. It's the first one of the...
That's the main one I remember.
Yeah, but you don't really remember it.
Look, just give me a couple more, and if we don't get me on one of them too, then we'll come back and we'll do one of these ape films, okay?
I've tried to get you on this before, and I really, really think we should do it. Planet of the Apes, directed by Tim Burton.
Is that with Mark Wahlberg?
That's with Mark Wahlberg.
Look, if we're doing any of them, it's not that one, okay? We're doing
the ones
with Franco in, yeah? Okay?
Okay.
Just get off apes.
Okay.
Give me one non-ape.
We really need to do this one. I know you don't want to do it.
Uh-huh.
You don't want to do any of these.
What is it? Is it another ape?
It's not another ape.
Okay.
8mm.
Oh, God. So it's Snuff or Ape, is it? Is that my choice? My Sophie's choice is Snuff or Ape.
I'll give you one more. Like, this is your one get out. I'm
okay.
Give you one get out.
One get out. One get out. One get out.
You were never really here.
Oh, wow. Snuff, Ape, or Pedo Rescue. Let's do apes.
Which
I'm going to watch all the apes.
But which apes? Because you've not seen War. You should have seen War. War's the best one.
I'm going to watch all of the apes.
But which one are we going to do? Rise.
The trilogy.
We're going to do the trilogy.
All I'm saying is I'm going to watch all three. That's all I'm saying.
Great, so will I. I'm already super... We're definitely doing it because I'm loving this vibe already.
What?
Your disinterest.
Right.
To not liking something, and me, who quite likes them all, and is also excited about the new one.
Yeah,
I like the originals as well.
I like the original one. It's good.
Oh, not just the original one, mate. There's more than the original one.
Is there?
There's apes. There's beyond. There's beneath. There's
beneath the planet of
conquer.
The apes.
Yeah, man. This is going to be an epic three part. Podcast.
Okay.
I'm
going to
make
Lord.
You talk about apes all day long.
Okay. And I'm going to talk about TikTok videos I've seen that have different apes in them.
So that was the Wild episode, 2014. Jean-Marc Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean.
Jean Valjean. Is it you, Jean Valjean?
I've been your host as ever. And yeah, that's it. Say bye, Joe.
Bye, Joe.